out there, everybody, and welcome to Caffeination 241. This is the planning edition. A lot of planning went into this show, and hopefully it's going to show. Hopefully you're going to enjoy your time here at the Caffeination podcast, which is lovingly nestled over at www.caffeination.com. Coincidentally enough, that is caffeination.com. If you are here for caffeine culture technology news, then you have found the right place. This is the one and only, the best source online. I'm just telling you right now, there's no small amount of hubris goes into that one. But we'd like to think that you're going to really enjoy it. I got a lot of great stuff to talk to you about today. On today's show, you're going to hear about any and all of the following topics: the Wii Fit, again, last time, I promise, mice, robots, sea, being the ocean, old man in the sea kind of stuff, manta rays, coffee, and grilling. Yes, that last bastion of truly manly cooking. However, I do know a lot of women who can grill very well. It just has a very manly aura about it. Could just be a cultural thing, I don't know. But we got a fantastic show lined up for you today. We have a whole bunch of tech cruft, a whole bunch of caffeine and food, relatively evenly balanced. And then, of course, we have the thing which we promised you 2 days ago, but it's been a little bit of a crazy week here. I haven't been able to put as much design work into it as I had wanted, so I'm just going to announce it right up front as opposed to later on. If you are looking for the Caffeination's one and only zombie plan, the entirety of the collected knowledge of all of the different people from the Caffeination world, all of it's been verified, error checked, and everything else, I decided to really put my heart and soul and brain into this one, and really kind of make a fun, what I think's a fun little poster. I'm up to comments, feedback, suggestion, hate mail, whatever else you want to do. You can head on over and send it to caffeination@gmail.com. But the entirety of the poster's up there. There's a whole bunch of cartoon zombies on there. There's a whole bunch of other stuff. Just one little caveat: everything you see on the poster, I drew in some form or another. So I hate clip art. I don't like it very much. So it's, everything's up there in some form or another I had to create. So we're just putting that caveat out there. Hopefully you enjoy it. It's basically a list of bullet points, things you really need to consider. We've already gone over the length and the breadth of everything on the last show, so we're not going to bore you any longer. I just wanted to kind of point out that it was up for download. It's a PDF. If you need a larger version, if you'd like to print out a poster or anything like that, we might be doing that later on. But hey, that it's up there. It's out there. Hopefully you enjoy that. All right. Before we get too much further into today's show, we did want to talk to you just a little bit about our sponsor. When you meet with colleagues or clients in person, you end up spending a fortune on gas or airfare, and you waste all of your time in traffic, airports, and hotels. All that, and it was just a two-hour meeting. This problem will not trouble you any longer. You just need to do more and travel a whole lot less. Hold a meeting online from your computer with GoToMeeting. Everyone logs on to GoToMeeting.com during the conference call and sees your computer desktop on all of their monitors. You get more done in less time without the hassle of driving or the pain of flying. Try GoToMeeting free right now for 30 days. With this special offer, just visit www.gotomeeting.com/techpodcast. That's gotomeeting.com/techpodcast for your free trial today. Thank you, GoToMeeting, for being a continued sponsor here at the Caffeination Podcast, and we're just going to dig right on into today's show. This is a one little comment, and then I promise you the next show will not start off with a story about Twitter. In the last show, we talked a little bit about Mike Arrington from over at TechCrunch and how he's been kind of criticizing Twitter for a little while, and rightly so in some cases, a little over the top in other cases. But hey, you know what? If vitriol's how you get your readership, and he has the readership the size he does, then I'm no one to tell him how to operate his business. But the funny thing was, he was making comments to the effect that if Twitter didn't hold up through the Apple's Worldwide Developers Conference, it's considered to be one of the most stressful times for most networks that purvey news in a very real-time fashion. So places like Engadget, Gizmodo, and a whole bunch of other places get really slammed during that coverage, and Twitter was expected to get slammed as well. And they probably did. They reduced a lot of the feature set during the presentation, and they reduced the amount of times any IP address was able to actually go to the website. So every once in a while, somebody would say, oh, you know, Twitter's down, it's horrible, it's over. But, you know, if you click refresh, it's back. It's just they were limiting the amount of times that you could sit there like a madman refreshing. And I really liked how they handled it. It didn't go down. It was very stable through the entire thing, and congrats to those guys. The funny thing, however, was around halfway through it, TechCrunch went down. And about half the people on Plurk and half the people who were on Twitter and everything started mentioning the fact that they couldn't get to TechCrunch. But so it's, and then after the situation was over and everything had been resolved, he Mike Arrington actually makes a funny little post, and I just kind of offhand mentioned, since he was actually at the event, he didn't have to rely on live coverage or anything, and he just basically said kind of a little one-off, so did Twitter survive? It's like, yeah, Twitter did fine. Your site, not so much. So I just thought it was a little bit of a just desserts. Thought it was kind of funny to goof on it a little bit. But hey, you know what? It was a pretty interesting event. If in case you didn't hear, hey, guess what? There's a new iPhone out. All right, and we're moving right along because it's not the kind of thing I usually cover here. I mean, there's about 15 new phones out a day around here. So we're going to move right along to a fun story that I found. And this is over at Trend Hunter, and it's over at a couple different places. There's an unnamed artist in a series of photographs that the man is attempting to recreate Leonardo da Vinci's very famous self-portrait from when he's relatively old. He's recreating it by using a hammer and nails, and he mapped everything out onto a very large board. I can only assume it's a board. There's no information about this, and it has different logos at the bottom of every picture I've seen. Nobody knows the guy's name. Nobody can find any information on the guy, and it's not a new story either. That's the interesting part. The story, I kept searching for nail art, and of course you get everybody who just got their nails did, and you know, you have all the different people who are very adept at painting very tiny pictures. This is a massive picture. If I was to guesstimate as to how tall this actually was when it was finished and completed, and it's stunning. I love art in metal. It's really... Metal is very unforgiving. You are either very good at what you do and it comes out looking unbelievably, or you really need to go back and practice, and metal is very unforgiving in that way. So this is a really, really nice representation of that original piece of art, all done with a hammer and nails, just nails bent and hammered in with different deflections to actually reflect the light at a certain angle. And a lot of the different pictures that are up there, you really owe it to yourself to head on over there and check it out, especially some of the pictures, you know, going through. He used, I think it looks like about 7 or 8 different kinds of nails. So the big wide flatheads, the little finishing nails, and it just kept going. And it looks like 2 colors of nails as well. The actual background of it looks like it's all done in copper nails or something along those lines, and the actual visage of Leonardo da Vinci as it is done in silver nails. So I really, really think it's awesome. Unfortunately, the man doesn't have a name on anything that I've been able to find. So it's around 7 months old. If anybody can please find this guy's name, please feel free to email me. All right, moving right along. It says, how the digital TV transition will accidentally help HDTV sales. Now, this is the entirety of the story. Is basically next February of 09, I forget what exact date it is, there's commercials on it all over the place right now, but the analog signals will be shut off. So basically, if you have a TV, almost said computer, if you have a TV that receives all your channels, you know, 3, 6, 10, whatever the standard channels in your area are, through the antenna, you know, through the over-the-air, you're not plugged into cable other than power, and that's it. Then you're going to have issues because you're going to need all the new spiffy stuff they're talking about, all the digital TV receivers. This is not HDTV, which is where this story comes in. A lot of people are misunderstanding what this actually means, and they're going out and they're buying HDTVs. And people aren't really trying as hard as they could to dissuade them. In fact, a lot of the stores have actually been put out and had ads, you know, because they were selling older TVs that don't have this new technology, but they're still HDTV. But they're saying, oh yeah, you can use this after that time. Yeah, sure, if you have cable or if you have satellite, you're perfectly fine. It doesn't matter what your TV is. However, if you don't, or if you'd like to work off the grid for a little bit, then you know what? There's a lot of resistance here. So there's been years of broadcasters that are trying to really hone in on this, and they've been really kind of playing the strong card about this and fighting against cable and everything like that. So all of their past propaganda is coming back to kind of bite them, and people are just going out and buying whole new TVs without even realizing it, and those TVs are probably going to suffer the same problems. So it's a little bit of an interesting pickle. So if you have an older relative or somebody that you know that has a TV but does not have cable or satellite or anything like that, and they're still watching all their shows and they're perfectly fine, make sure you get them in touch with the government so they can get that coupon. They don't need to do anything. They don't need to sign up to cable or anything, although cable and all those other people would absolutely love it. No, they only really need to go. There's a $40 coupon. I think that covers one of the converters, and it's just basically a new antenna that plugs into their TV. From everything I've seen, it works relatively well. There's a new piece of technology that's coming out right now. It's called the Sea Glider. It's basically a military drone which has the capability of going under the waves, somewhat similar to the RoboFish that we talked about in the last episode. All right, next up here we have a story from over at Engadget. iRobot to convert UW's academic Sea Glider into a military drone. Basically, Sea Glider is a autonomous robot that's capable of doing research below the waves. So this thing has, you know, long range, and it's able to go out and sort of operate on its own. It's able to take oceanic measurements and a whole bunch of other stuff. Well, apparently iRobot, which is the same people who make the Roombas and everything like that, are actually partnering with the military yet again. And this is one of those things that it's really kind of hard to break people of the association with the fact that, oh yeah, iRobot makes those cute vacuums. Yes, they do. However, iRobot also has a military arm where they make not so cute things that do not so cute stuff. They're just unmanned vessels, and they're going to be designed by iRobot, which already has a fairly extensive line of military hardware out there. The other reason I linked to this particular version of the story is because it has Slim Pickens riding the actual robot down. And if you've ever seen Dr. Strangelove or How I Learned to Stop Worrying and Love the Bomb, then you will know this very iconic scene, and it's just really hilarious to actually look at it. I love that movie, and the Photoshop work they did here was quite nice. So just passing it along to hope everybody out there. This brings us to another story that I've been really trying to get out there for a while there. This is a sea creature which is wider. It's the only way to explain what this thing is. It's a sea creature which operates in an area in which sea creatures usually don't. This thing is flying. Imagine a manta ray made entirely of silvery material gliding through the atmosphere in the atrium in at your office building, for instance. Well, if you don't have to imagine it for very much longer, a German engineering firm called Festo has created this. It's called an air ray. This entire thing is created of foil. It's created of like the same kind of foil mylar film that you would use in a balloon, but done in a different way. So it's aluminum vaporized foil. So it's probably a little bit stronger than that. So each wing is actually created, the motion of flapping, and actually the flight mechanisms and everything are done through four servos. This thing, it floats around, flies around, and actually flaps its wings to migrate through the air. And it's really kind of freaky to look at it, because it looks like it should be going underwater. It looks like it should be tooling around deep beneath the waves, and it's not. It's actually, you know, 50 feet off the ground or something like that. So this I could see definitely in one of the sporting events or sporting arenas out there, you know, handing out the leaflets, but everything is done through the addition and subtraction, the contraction of different bladders of air that's all controlled through four separate servos that are in there. So I'm pretty sure it's like a servo to move them up, a servo to move the two massive wings down, and then another two servos to do the same thing with the tail. So it actually is capable of doing like loop-de-loops in the middle of the air and stuff. I don't know what you would need this for, but at this point in time, it doesn't really need to have a specific idea behind it. It's just, it's awesome to watch it, and it only weighs 1.6 kilograms. I mean, this is insane at how light this thing is, and the heights that it's able to reach, first of all, and there's next to no moving parts in this entire thing, and it's just so graceful that it's really neat to watch, and you owe it to yourself. Head on over to Hackaday.com to check this one out. The link's over at Cavination.com to direct to the story that we're talking about. Moving right along here, this is a different kind of Wii Fit story that I wanted to talk to you about. Now, this video has been played over 2 million times on YouTube. It's a gentleman who is taping his girlfriend playing the Wii Fit in somewhat less than standard attire. So basically, she's wearing bikini briefs and a t-shirt, and you know, she goes through the hula hoop demonstration. It's very alluring and everything. You're watching it. And then at the very end of the hula hoop demonstration, he turns around and makes a face at the camera, basically intimating that it was all surreptitiously done. And they've even put the story out there that his girlfriend, she's 25, he's 30, that she was very upset at him originally, but now she's just decided to go to it. But, well, people are starting to look one step beyond this, and they said, well, maybe not exactly, because both people involved are actually marketers. And while they're not under contract with Nintendo, Nintendo has struggled to reach a more mature audience in the past because a lot of their advertising is not necessarily aimed at more adult, more mature people. So this could be a way that they could have gone around. Of course, they've denied it completely, but, you know, I don't understand exactly what his motive was in doing it. I agree with the guys over at Kotaku, because they said if she had known she was being filmed, she would have changed her outfit to something cuter, perhaps let her hair down, taken her glasses off, etc. Sure, because scantily clad women has never sold anything in the history of anything. So this is 2 million viewers. It's insane. Just wanted to put it out there, and you can head on over there and judge for yourself whether or not you think it's a put on. But it's just one way or another, it's an interesting story to put out there. And I think it's a little bit of tomfoolery. I think we're being had but on some form or another. I mean, even if it's not by Nintendo, if it's just to showcase their marketing skills, showcase their ability at creating viral video, then I'm pretty sure they've done it. But then again, the recipe of having a scantily clad woman on a video is not necessarily a tough nut to crack, if you know what I mean. It's not necessarily completely alchemy or something like that. People kind of understand that if you put an attractive woman on the screen, hey, guess what? People are going to want to watch her. So, moving right along, we have a Lego scanner. Yep, that's right. Yet another creation from Lego Mindstorms. This is a Lego Mindstorm kit that's actually able to take a piece of paper and scan the image that's on it and actually produce a relatively good copy of it with a relatively simple setup. So I wonder exactly at what point do I need to stop buying things for the place where I work? If I need to stop buying equipment for Temple and just start buying the kids and the different departments kits for Legos. Because, I mean, I've seen Lego printers. I've seen Lego scanners now, and I've seen a whole bunch of other Lego automation tools. So I think I might be wasting my money buying these expensive scanners and printers and everything. I should, you know, help them out a little bit and, you know, just kind of forward them in the direction of the Lego Mindstorms in general. Maybe we'll save a buck or two. Maybe the kids will learn some new skills. But these are all the NXT-based image scanners. So there's an entire huge platform of cool stuff behind Legos. And this is Legos for electronic geeks. So it's kind of a different skill set, and it's kind of a different set of people who are really into Legos, because there's a lot of people out there who really enjoy them. There's the people who like the kits, who like to go, and they like to build the different, you know, like the Star Destroyers and stuff like that. Then there's the people who like the ones with the gears, and they like to be able to create their own little cracking machines, like from Wallace and Gromit and stuff like that. And then there's the people who go one step further and have way too much disposable income, who really enjoy the Lego Mindstorms. And that might be the kind of people we're dealing with here. I don't know if it was a kit that they used, but I seriously doubt it. I just, you know, hats off. That's a fantastic little display there. All right, moving along, we have yet an interesting... We're kind of going up and down here, big idea, small idea, and we're just trying to navigate through the really strange and interesting stuff that I found online this past couple days. But one of the things that I've seen people struggle with a lot of the times, they end up throwing away the very basic part of the soap, the centermost core of whatever bar of soap they're using. They've seen, you know, it just kind of commonly gets tossed off, and it's not one of those things where people, you know, think anything about it, but it's still waste, and it's still something that, you know, you're not using to its fullest. Well, a different company out there has created something called Soap Gifts to encourage waste reduction. So basically, they've embedded different gifts within the center of the soap, and the gifts actually have a purpose, which is kind of cool. So what they appear to be is little bubble bath pills. No word on exactly how much these things are. I really enjoy the idea behind it. So it's your standard soap. So you use the bar until you're all the way down to the center. And then when you pop the thing out of the center, it's a capsule for a bubble bath. And that's at least that's what I can only assume from the picture diagrams they have there. Because they show you a little hand and then a tiny little egg thing. You throw the egg into the water and then all of a sudden there's bubbles. So that's the only thing I'm going to draw from it. There's a whole bunch of different sizes and shapes of the bars out there. You know, I think I would go for this. I think it'd be kind of fun to play with. I don't necessarily know if it's going to take off as much as they want, because if they're going to price these bars of soap higher than the already very low prices of soap that are out there, I don't really think there's going to be a lot of need for them. You know what I mean? All right, moving right along, we have an interesting little take on hard drive security. Now, if you've seen a post that I had on Seismic that we're going to be talking about in a little while, you know that I do a lot of work on the internal side of computers from time to time. And one of the things that I've noticed that a lot of people really don't take into account is their hard drive. And I'm not saying, you know, oh my God, you know, all my data is gone. I'm saying that when they're getting rid of a computer, that a lot of people actually leave the hard drive with all of their stuff on it. Or they'll take their files off and they just think that erasing them once is a good way to go. No, you can erase something up to like 8 or 9 times. You can overwrite it with data 8 or 9 times, and it's still accessible by certain types of programs. For instance, there's a program out there, company out there called Drive Savers. It's $1,500 roughly just to look at your drive. And this is for people who had catastrophic failures, like there was a fire in your office and your hard drive is trashed, but you still need the data on there. Backup people, backup like 15 times in a row. I'm talking like multiple places, one offsite at all times. So if you're going to take the hard drive out of your computer, how do you dispose of it properly? Well, you could just take it apart, but some real enterprising person could theoretically go through your trash and find a way to piece it back together. You could use a drive punch, which destroys the drive, but that's not necessarily very satisfying, and they're hard to come by because they're very nice and huge. Or you could do what they're doing over at Hackaday, which is called drive slag. This is actually turning your hard drive into molten metal. Yep, that's correct. Melting everything and anything. Now, this is not green living. I'm just going to let you know here. The fumes that are coming off whatever you're melting in your hard drive are probably not kosher to the environment. In fact, I'm pretty much going to guarantee at this point that they're not. But the method used to actually create this hard drive muck is really impressive. They made their own little furnace at it, and I can't even begin to think how much electricity, how much gas that they're actually going through to do this. But you know, this is after they were done melting their hard drive down. The only thing they were really left with were some bits of the steel casing on the very edge, and some little pieces and fibers of silicon that were actually left over after that were actually left over from the PCB after it was melted down, the little circuit board that's on the hard drive. So this is a way to make sure that your hard drive is completely and utterly dead. What I would like to have seen them done at the end of this is actually create some kind of art through the poured metal or find some other use for it. I think that would be really interesting and really kind of cool. All right, next little thing we have up here is from ogizmo.com. It's called the 3-mile pencil. It has nothing to do with the nuclear plant, has nothing to do with a race or anything like that. But it basically is a pencil with different kinds of strange markings on it. It goes from 0 to 3 in half-mile increments, basically with the idea that as you write, the amount of distance that your pencil has traveled throughout the different sharpenings and everything that you would go through the entire pencil, by the time you get down to the nub at the very end, you will have written, or your pencil tip will have traveled over 3 miles on paper. It's a really impressive idea, and the only thing that I'm looking at these, 3-mile pencil sells for about $3.40 for one pencil. However, I'm looking at it, and I'm pretty sure that I could hold a normal pencil up to the screen and probably inscribe on it where exactly the 0 through 3 miles is. And of course, you could also do it in kilometers at that point, too, because after you get the scale down, it's nothing beyond that. I don't know if maybe it's the kind of lead, and you could always just kind of do a general approximation as you're going through it. But I'm looking at it and saying, you know what, $3.40 is way too much money to spend for a single pencil. You know, that's more money than an entire pack of normal pencils could get. So I just wanted to put it out there as kind of a neat idea and kind of an interesting concept to consider. But at the same point in time, say that it was ridiculously priced. And yes, it's very inexpensive when you consider it, but it's expensive for what it is. You know what I mean? Move it along to some more interesting stuff out there. One of the things that I kind of put forth earlier today is, do you think there's a tool that every geek should have? And I was thinking about this as I was sitting in my office and I was trying to troubleshoot a hard drive I had recently pulled out of a Mac laptop. And the hard drive was described as having a sneezing problem. That's just the way that the person's kid had described how how the thing was actually acting. And I thought that was kind of cute and fun at the same point in time. It was very telling. So I wanted to put forth a video over on Seismic, which was relatively well received. Basically, one of the utilities that I use in work that I find really, really, really useful, it's an SATA or a SATA to IDE USB 2.0 adapter. So basically, it's a USB 2.0 cord. On the one end, it plugs into your computer, and on the other end, it plugs into your drive. And there's a whole bunch of other extra cables that come with it. It's only around $20. It's well worth it. I owe Fabrice the original point to that because he had one in his office, and it became invaluable. I borrowed it more than once, and we eventually had to get one of our own. I actually have one at home now because it's so useful. So they're just really useful. I highly recommend getting one. Then the last little thing we have here in TechCruft is I've started a new website. It's paulrmuller.com or paulrjmuller.com. It's basically a list of all the other places out on the internet where you can find me. So it's all the stuff that I've written. It's all the different articles of it. And it's slowly being updated to include absolutely all the different pieces of press and stuff that I've been involved in. So I'm trying to keep it up to date. It's just because I've been joining all these different social networks, and there's no real easy way to say, hey, yes, I'm here on this, I'm there on that. So I decided, you know what, if somebody searches for my name, one of the first things I want somebody to see is where I am. And I wanted to see what people thought about that, if anybody else out there had a similar idea. When I write the article up about it that I'm going to be doing in a day or so over at caffeination.com, I'm actually going to be referencing back to Chris Penn and his Web 2.0 resume, the idea behind that. So I just wanted to call this is my web presence index. It's how you know where I am, and if there's something you think is me and it's not listed on that page, it's probably not. That's the easiest way to put it. All right, moving right on to the caffeine and food section here at the Caffeination Podcast. We are going to blaze through this because there's a lot of really interesting stuff. I have a very good friend out there who spends most of his time cleaning things, and he's a very fastidious gentleman, and he actually took his grill apart before a party and cleaned it to where it looked brand new. This thing is 3 years old. There was not a speck of grease on it. My grill, on the other hand, has flavor, as I like to call it. I cook on cast iron, I'm not necessarily the cleanest person when it comes to grills. I don't think that you need to be. I think you need to take the bigger chunks of food off the actual grill. So if it involves, you know, scraping it with a wire brush, there should be no problem. As long as the grill's heated up, you know, just quick little run across the grates. And if it's more than that, you're doing something wrong. By the way, the harder you scrub, the more you scratch, the more stuff sticks. Just letting you know. I was kind of stunned when I saw this, but apparently some people are so retentive about their grills that they actually created a barbecue steam cleaner. So this strange brush actually has a water reservoir and a little valve that you can actually control the amount of water that's released. So you heat your grill up to 475, and then you use the steel bristles that they have, and they show you it cleaning it back to a lustrous shine. So if that's your thing, then you can head on over there and check that out. Apparently it's $25. It's called the Grill Daddy. Please, nobody get me this. I'm not interested. All I want's another wire brush because I wore out the first one. Speaking of grilling, this is dirty pool, old man. There's a replica craze going on in Japan right now. I was unaware of this, but apparently replica food is very hot over there. It's something that a lot of people are really enjoying. And there's a papercraft version of steak and a whole bunch of other different food over there. So it's really kind of interesting, and it's apparently it's like a national pastime to actually create different almost lifelike photorealistic versions of food that are not food. If it was me, I would be creating versions of food that are food and are very tasty. So I just wanted to put it out there. And then, since we put that out there, we've decided we would pick a piece of Japanese food that does not look like food, but is food. How would you like to have Windows laptop sushi? So, there's a little fun story about that. I don't know what else to say about that because there's not really much else you could say about that. But it's kind of fun, kind of cool. I enjoy sushi, so I probably would eat that. There's no real word on what exactly it's running, and it's kind of very meticulously colored and everything, so I don't really know what exactly it involves other than the fact that it's probably nori and rice and maybe a little bit of paint or food coloring, but other than that, I couldn't really tell you. Up next, we have another little story about coffee. Imagine that on the Caffeination Podcast. But it talks a little bit about the smell of coffee. Now, most people, you remember the Folgers commercials or all the other commercials where the gentleman is or the woman is laying in bed and the lovely aroma of whatever coffee they're hawking wafts over to them and they immediately perk up and they head downstairs. And that's a fairly common thing, and it's actually your nose leads you to most of the things, most of the good cups of coffee out there. But when you're looking at this, there's a bunch of scientists over at the National Institute of Advanced Industrial Science and Technology in Japan. Again, from Japan. Man, I had a lot of Japanese stories over there, and I didn't even realize that. But they deprived rats for sleep for a day, and then they examined their brains, and they found out they had reduced levels of a certain chemical. And when they were exposed to the aroma of coffee, 9 of those genes responded, and they were restored more near to their normal levels. And they were actually pushed above the normal levels for 2 of them. So they're actually investigating pumping the smell of coffee into workplaces. So it would actually be into factories and stuff like that. Now, what I would wonder is there's places like White Barn Candle and a whole bunch of other places that actually put coffee beans out to cleanse the nasal palate to allow you to actually smell things differently. So so if you're smelling one candle and you'd like to compare it to another, you're supposed to take a deep whiff of coffee beans at the same point in time. And much like smells wear off over time, like you don't realize that a certain smell is in the room, like if you're in a room full of lilacs or roses or something like that, you don't realize the smell is there after a little bit. I wonder if the actual effects diminish over time, and I wonder exactly what this does to your heart rate. Because with the rats, there's nothing conditioned inside them to say that, hey, you know what? The smell of coffee means you're supposed to get really excited. So this might be something interesting, because it means that there's something more to coffee than just the fantastic taste and the wonderful association we have the aroma with. So I wanted to kind of pass that along, and hey, if you start smelling coffee and nobody's brewing it, maybe your manager's trying to get a little bit more productivity out of you. All right, moving right along, we have 4 quick steps to having really good, really clean, really nice cups of coffee. And these are things that everybody should know about. I mean, these are not surprises to anybody. But we're just going to run down them real quick. The first thing up there is use good water. I know a couple people out there screaming, you know, yes, this is exactly what I've been talking about for years. The majority of the coffee that you're about to drink is water. So if you're using bad tap water from whatever office building you're in, then you're probably going to be drinking nasty coffee. The best coffee beans in the world will taste nasty with nasty water. That's just that plain and simple. Use only fresh, high-quality beans. So basically, if it's been roasted for over a week or two, then you're probably going to start getting a different kind of taste than the original roaster intended. If you're planning on just rocking out the standard variety beans, then that's perfectly fine too in my book. Just be aware that if you're going to be enjoying something of a more delicate palate, then you need to use fresh roasted beans. You need to treat yourself to that fact. The other thing is use a good grinder. This is something that I'm very guilty of. It's ideal to have a grinder that's very consistent in its grinding ability. But when you put it out there, basically you just need to understand for whatever method of brewing that you're actually going through, be it French press, be it espresso, be it drip brew, or whatever, you need to have the correct grind in there. So if you use the grind chart that we talked about a little while ago, basically compare the coarse, the median, and the fine, and find what works best for you. And the other thing is, when you're boiling water, if you're not doing this through a coffee maker, when you're boiling water, make sure you're not pouring actual boiling water over the coffee, but rather that's water just off boiling. Water boils at 212 degrees Fahrenheit, obviously 100 degrees centigrade, so the proper temperature for extracting the best flavor from coffee is actually between 194 and 204 degrees Fahrenheit. So Alton Brown from the Food Network basically says, you boil turn off the heat, remove it from the heat, count to five, and you're good to go. Pour away. So just with those quick little tips, you should hopefully be drinking better coffee by the time you're done this show. Next little thing we have here, hot news about a local coffee business. I had to mention, this is a tiny little local story from a Western Virginia, not West Virginia, but a western side of Virginia Community College. Basically, there's a company called Java the Hut, and they're opening their third chain. That's all I'm going to say. I love your name. It is a fantastic name. I have not heard a better name for a coffee shop in a long time. Everybody knows what you're talking about. Everybody will giggle when they hear it, and everybody will remember where they saw one. That's basically it. I mean, you guys have a fantastic marketing idea right there. That about wraps it up here for the Caffeination Podcast. I would like to thank everybody for listening here. This has been episode number 241. Hopefully you enjoyed all the vast array of content. Please remember to head on over and download your zombie plant poster. So it should be fun. Send me your comments, feedback, suggestion on that, or anything else we talked about here on today's show over at caffeination@gmail.com. You can phone me at 215-240-1319. You can Skype me at decaffeination, and everything else, every other possible way that you need to contact me is lovingly nestled over at www.caffeination.com. Thanks and stay caffeinated, people.